Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
One of the things that you and I did not really do the deep dive into was how none of the Celtics were nominated for an individual award. Now, if I have this correct, don't they go top three for these awards? So there's the voting, and then it's the top three are the ones that are the candidates for, like, Defensive Player of the Year, MVP. I think that's how that works.
Yeah, so right now, so the finalists, so the top three finalists in each award
category.
Has been, in each category,
there we
released.
Go.
Most Valuable Player, Defensive Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Most Improved Player, Sixth Man of the Year, Clutch Player of the Year, and – surprised. I'm not sure how they quantify that, but that's fine. And then Coach of the Year.
So none of the Celtics were in the top three for any of those.
None of them were finalists on any of the categories. And I was actually kind of surprised, to be honest with you.
Thought Tatum would be top three for MVP?
I felt like he would be moved out of that. But defensive player, I know like a lot, most of the attention when it comes to defensive awards usually goes to a big man, but even though Marcus Smart won the award, Sixth Man of the Year award, he had a guy that won that also, but he never won a championship. Coach of the Year? Coach of the Year is, I think, the biggest snub out of all of them based on where Joe Mazzulla came from. And I think he's a victim of his own circumstances because everyone believes, and rightfully so for the most part, that he has the most talented team in the NBA. So they're not giving him credit for anything. They're saying your roster is so good, is so awesome that, you know what, you really don't need to do much heavy lifting. So we're not going to acknowledge you for that.
Now, there were some Celtics like Kristaps Porzingis who didn't hit that 65 games to where you're not eligible for awards, because I know for those wondering about defense, Jrue Holiday ended up, I think it was 68 games during the regular season for him. But regardless, Joe Mazzulla was asked today, our guy Terp was over an hour back, I guess. And Joe Mazzulla was asked about none of the Celtics being nominated for an individual award. Now, I'm very curious as to how people are going to take this, because normally these coaches almost always engage in defending the player, right? Oh, I can't believe Tatum wasn't a finalist for MVP. I can't believe this guy wasn't a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year. Because, Christian, with the way they are in the NBA, you would think that the coach would almost have to stand up for the player. Not so fast with Joe Mazzulla.
Great thing about this team is, I think, from day one, we've appreciated the individual awards that we've gotten from, you know, the Player of the Month, Staff of the Month, and whatnot. But at the end of the day, I think one of the biggest strengths of this team is they haven't had that agenda. And so none of the guys have brought it up, and I don't think it's important at all, because we're all focused on what we need to do as a team.
It feels like Joe Mazzulla has done the impossible. In a team sport where there is still an individual element, Joe Mazzulla seems to have taken that kind of individual element out of this particular basketball team in trying to win a championship. And not that other coaches in years past were like, yeah, Tatum should be the MVP, but we know that there was, especially for Tatum in particular, kind of the lobbying to be a first-team All-NBA guy. kind of the lobbying to, hey, I'm in the MVP club type deal. And now, while Tatum isn't an MVP, but his hand is stamped, everybody, hey, he's a first-team All-NBA guy. We kind of know that going into the year, as long as he doesn't screw it up type thing. You needed a little bit of the verbiage to sort of go with it to pump him up.
He loves this stuff. This is just fuel.
And Mazulig's going the other way and being like, yup, there's no individual awards here. I love it.
No, I see.
Most coaches would never say that with a superstar at the level of Jason Tatum.
Yeah, but he's also playing the disrespect card. Like, this is fuel for him. He gets to say, you won more games than anybody. You're the best team in the NBA, and not one of you made the top three in any of these categories, and not even me, not any of us. They still don't respect you. They still think you can't do it. Like, this is why he likes the whole, you know, he likes the late game, like, difficult situations.
But doesn't that kind of contradict some of what we heard from the very beginning of the year from Mazzulla, which was trying to eliminate a lot of that kind of individualism because there was the talk of sacrifice. Everybody across the board has to sacrifice a little bit for the greater goal to be achieved.
To me, this is his Philadelphia parade. Philadelphia Eagles parade. This is what he's doing. If you had cameras in there, he would be up at the front and saying, you want to hear who the MVP is? Let's see who the top three MVPs are. You know, he goes through the list. Hey, you want to talk about defensive players? He's going to point to Derek White. He's going to point to Drew Holiday. Hey, you want to talk about sixth man of the year? I mean, I don't know if they really have one. Al Horford. Yeah, you know what? You'll be our sixth man of the year.
Oh, Sam Hauser. Pump up your guy.
Okay, like Mazzulla. Coach of the year? I mean, he can't really talk about himself, but the message will be sent. They don't think on one hand, sure, like, the team wins. I get it. But this is an individual sport in a lot of regards. And then
cater to the superstars in the NBA, even the coaches.
How can
it'll be a good game. They're a good team. And we played them earlier this year. You know, I know, you know, everyone thinks we suck and, you know, can't win any games. So we'll see.
And that's not even it. They were still good, weren't they? They were just old.
Yeah, that's tame from Brady. Yeah. But you made an interesting analogy, and it sparked some thought as you were kind of going through it all. This is his Philadelphia parade.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting because, in a weird way, it runs against a lot of what we heard all year long, which was team, 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 team. But it would be kind of that, like, wacko coach stroke of genius if he took that and said, yeah, we're all about team, but we all got disrespected.
Yes.
So it's either Joe Mazzulla said, if we do it this way, we'll win at a high level and the awards don't matter. Or does Joe flip it around and be like, no, Jedi mind trick. We've all been disrespected, so now we all need to stick it to everybody. It's a bold strategy,
you,
but you know
it
what?
You're on it. This is why he's like, yes.
I feel like you're on
because
it.
Because you know the one thing that they're going to have to deal with is complacency. The one thing they're going to have to deal with is, like, you know, trying to keep their edge, right, because they're really good. So the only way is to manufacture. You got to manufacture that chip on your shoulder. And I would say it's set up perfectly for him.
There's a lot of things going the Celtics way
now. Oh, it's like, now just manage it. Like, even like the first game of the series with the Heat, like, playing dirty and checking them and challenging them. And then that Eric Spoelstra, I just saw more news about him saying, well, you know, it's always a tough, hard-fought physical game whenever we play against each other.
How does Mazzulla break through to become a consistent Coach of the Year candidate? Can he? Like, is that award just rigged so that it really is the you did the most with the least award? Or you brought a team to the playoffs out of nowhere?
Yeah, so your top are what? Chris Finch, Timberwolves, the Thunder, Jamal Mosley from the Magic. I would say Mike Malone of the Denver Nuggets. I mean, he's got one All-Star on that team. One that made the All-Star in 2024. And you could say, well, they had the best player in the NBA. Well, I don't know. Seems like the Lakers have two really good players. One's a Hall of Famer, considered the best, debatable. Mm. So it is weird the way they – I would say even most improved player, Who would you think would be the most improved player on the Celtics?
Honestly, probably Hauser.
I was going to say Derek White. I would say he elevated his game to a whole nother level. If you're really going to X's and O it, if you're really going to critique it,
hey, he was
and really
a first
dissect
round pick,
it,
though.
Derek White,
like it was
I know,
him.
But he was like nobody in San Antonio. He was a backup when he came here. I don't know.
He was 29th overall. It was late first, but still, like he was a first rounder. Sam Hauser was a. You know, guy walked in from a cornfield and they said, oh, you can shoot threes. Can you play D? Good enough. We'll get you in there. And guys like Fourier fall in love with him.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Merrill Hodge was one of the first running backs that I remember. Merrill Hodge, NFL analyst, is with Gresh and Fourier. And he's joining us to talk about some NFL draft today. Merrill, good afternoon. How are you?
Gentlemen, I couldn't be any better, man. Always good to be the Yinzer.
Well, there you go. That's right. One Yinzer to another. People don't know Yinzer. They know Chip Chop Tam. And I've been spreading the gospel about the Chip Chop Tam, Merrill. But you were spreading the draft gospel. And, brother, you caught our ear because it sure as heck seems like here it's going to be Drake May at the number 3 overall pick in the draft. You had some strong thoughts on him. I do want to ask you, Merrill, because you were pretty tough. There's no question. Hey, this is the kind of guy that gets you fired. I'm curious from you, what kind of reaction did you hear from other NFL brethren who break this kind of stuff down? Were you hearing from people saying, hey, you know what, Merrill, I see it like you do. You're right.
Well, Mark Schlereth, hadn't watched him. And I did a show with Mark Schlereth in Denver. He's on CBS, was at ESPN for a long time as well. And he's like, I couldn't. I mean, he said just one thing to me. He only watched 3 games, so I don't. So you need to watch more than that. But within that body of work, he's like, man, I couldn't believe how inconsistent he was. And I'm like, and it doesn't change. It doesn't change, and he's the same guy for 2 years. And he's marginal at best when he has a good day, like Pitt. He played Pitt. That would be one of the best games that I can say I've seen him play in his 2 years that I studied. And that wouldn't be a game that you went, wow, now that guy is a difference maker. Now that guy is a top 3 pick. That inconsistency in throwing the football and processing, and that's just some of the problems. There's a whole litany of things that you have to correct and work on. And there'll be a lot of people go, oh, you can teach that, you can fix that, you can work on that. Well, you can teach and fix anything you want, can it ultimately be learned and applied? And there are some things you can't change, and there are some things you cannot fix. And accuracy is one of those things. Now, people go, let me tell you this, you can dial it in a little bit, but if you're not an accurate passer and you're an inconsistent passer, that is going to be magnified in the National Football League because I don't look at where a player is playing. I look at where he's going to play. Okay, like so, I'll give you an example. These two things matter to me the most. They're woven fibers, so they are like one. You can't have one without the other. You got to be a good processor, meaning good decision maker, and you got to be accurate. Okay, and then there's degrees in that realm right there. That we could talk about. But you got to really be able to do those two in a relatively high degree, and neither one of them he does in a high degree. His consistency and his accuracy is all over the board at short, intermediate, vertical. But then if you stick him in a dirty pocket to an environment that he's going to go to, he's really bad. And he's really not that good when it's a clean pocket. And then if you look at his overall mechanics, he's a lumbering kind of guy. He's not a fast twitch guy. He's slow. His throwing motion is elongated, that slow. You remember Byron Leftwich?
Yeah, yep.
Byron Leftwich had one flaw, and it ran him out of the league. And that was his elongated motion. And the reason that ran him out of the league, and this is what happened. Every defensive coordinator that faced Byron Leftwich went, this is exactly what they're thinking. Because this is what's happening in the environment they're coming to. Because it happened in college. They're like, okay, you see that 0.3 or 0.4 seconds longer, we can hit him. We can bring – let's bring a DB. We'll hit him. We can't hit other guys. And more pressures, more hits. And that ran him out of the league. That eventually ran him out of the league. That was his only flaw. So when you look at what he does, how would I look at him and what he's got to do in this league and the expectations, I got way too many things to fix, a majority of them that I can't. And if we're always working on what we got to fix, what am I going to have time to work on the offense that you've got to learn, the defenses that are going to see him? And he said something that I thought was interesting, which really tells you he has no idea. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. He doesn't even have a clue what he's about to enter. But he said, you'd rather game plan with me than against me. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. When these defensive coordinators see what he does and all his flaws, they will come after him. They will expose him. And I just – that kind of guy, he needs to be drafted. You put him in the first – then expectations. Okay, when they draft him, who are they already comparing him to? Josh Allen. He is not even close to Josh Allen. There isn't anything results. I see nothing about Josh Allen. And I say, well, yeah, Jake May has that. No, not one. I mean, maybe. I see nothing. There's nothing. It's just like nothing. But that's what people are going to expect. Listen, I understand a kid wants to go in the first round. I understand it. But what are you guys trying to do there? You're trying to build a team. You're trying to build a championship. Okay, a championship team. Teams win championships. No quarterback's going to win you a Super Bowl all the time. I understand the validity to them and importance of them, but that guy could set you back 5 years in your organization based on all the issues that he had in college and that will be magnified in the National Football League.
So we're talking to Merrill Hodge, and Merrill, you got a pretty good track record. I think the most infamous or famous one that you have is your analysis when you were on First Take with Skip Bayless, dissecting who is it?
Johnny Manziel.
Johnny Manziel, yeah.
Yeah, so I would assume that there would be a lot of, GMs and coaches out there that are nervous about possibly drafting a guy like Drake May based on your track record. So how dangerous is it for a team like the Patriots to draft the guy that, that is so, immature and so, lacking talent that he's almost unfixable?
I'm sure you guys probably know that sometimes, whoever the decision maker is, let's say it's the head coach, or let's say it's the GM, let's say it's a collaboration. At any time, ownership can trump that. We all know that. I can tell you story upon story upon story, okay? Doesn't mean the football guys get to make their decision, okay? There can be an owner come in and have a wild idea and go, nope, you're going to draft A, okay? We could do a 3-hour feature on that, and we could share story after story that would blow your mind. Okay. I don't think that Kraft does that. I think he hires people to do their job and lets them do their job. That's what makes him a good owner. I think how you have to look at this is look at Drake May. Is Drake May, okay, if you're the third pick, is there no other football player available that is better than Drake May? Okay, I haven't looked at all of them, but I could think of a half a dozen that are better than him that the Patriots would need. I'm just taking the wide receiver department. People are better there than Drake May are going to be a better impact and a quicker impact to help your team. Again, we're building the team, okay? We're not going to solve that in one pick. They use this excuse. This is what's available this year. Well, you got next year. Okay, you're not going to build a championship team this year based on where you guys sit right now, the needs that you have. Man, you can get a lot closer if you do it right. And I just think that when you get caught up, we got to get a quarterback, and then you do something like this where you have a kid with so many issues and inconsistencies, and that Because keep in mind, when you're doing that, it's going to work. It's got to work. If it doesn't work, we all know what happens. You know, your organization gets it. Shoot, you just been through it.
So who would be a better option then, Merrill? Like if Drake May, well, if you let's just say that the unexpected happens and they do trade out, and you know there's the top six or seven quarterbacks that are out there. You assume Jaden Daniels is gone, Caleb Williams is gone. Who's the next best guy that you have noticed?
Well, listen, I've not looked at every player available, so to really have the Rolodex of all the particular options. Let's say you get stuck at three. Who would you take over there? You know, I can only tell you people that I have seen that I would like. You know, there's Harrison, the wide receiver. The kid from LSU, number eight. And there's a couple receivers that just based on what I have seen. But let's say they do trade out, you know, and is there somebody later that you could go draft that you wouldn't be as handicapped and harnessed with, okay, this has got to work. And if it doesn't work, man, we are in trouble. You know, I really started I don't know if you know much about the Rattler kid, you know, when he was
Spencer.
In Oklahoma. And now I'm telling you that there's a kid who has a really good skill set. And he's really trying to do the right things. You can tell he just didn't have an extremely good team around him. A lot of his mistakes came when you had to really, at the end of games, you just happen to make decisions and force the ball and take shots you normally wouldn't. But there was a maturity to him, and I think there's something there that if you got him in the league, not a first rounder, I'm not going to talk about first, but if you picked him up later, you know, say later in the second round or third round, man, you'd, from a Patriot perspective, okay, we're talking about either doing Drake May or we're trading out of there, getting somebody else can really contribute to our team. But I know I have a much better feel to be successful on our team and help us, which we need to do when we make that first pick. And then get somebody that I have a chance to develop and has a better skill set and less to work on than Drake May would be Rattler. I would take a swing at him. And I don't know if I'd take it till the third round. But if you could get him there, man, I'll tell you this, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You know, that's one of those that's like, you know, it doesn't work. But I find there more upside with him than you would have Drake May with all of the issues that exist with him and how he has to play in the National Football League.
Merrill, thanks for the time. We appreciate it and the breakdown of Drake May and your thoughts. And at some point, we'll have to get you back on to talk about the demise of the running back in the NFL and how people are trying to turn everyone into unfactor backs, or at least with their paychecks anyway. Merrill, thank you, man. We appreciate it.
You get you guys. You bet you, boys. See you guys.
There we go. And by the way, there we go. And Merrill has a book out as well. Merrill's book is Find a Way. And you can go to MerrillHodge.com for more information on that. Joining us now, former GM of the Pats and the Kansas City Chiefs. You see him on NFL Network. Friend of the show, our guy, Scott Pioli. Scott, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Hey, never mind friend of the show. I'm a friend of you guys.
That is true.
So if that is the case, we would both like an invite to Nantucket.
Oh, dear Lord. I've never been. I'm not allowed.
Pioli? Well, we moved. We don't let folks like you and 4A over here, man.
No, that's fine. You know, we would especially since,
totally fine.
You know, we
I tell you, I'm glad it was so funny. I don't know if you guys heard, but I was trying to Christian. I was texting you. I couldn't get through on the phone. This is like classic draft day stuff. You're trying to get a hold of a prospect, let them know you're picking them, and the phones aren't working. Little drama we had getting together here this morning, guys. Oh, you still got me.
So the Gremlins got us in Detroit. What are you going to do? We're going to go right back to the phones with Scott Pioli to talk about everything draft. Scott, thanks for hanging on. We appreciate you. And I know I had the long answer and we dropped out, but basically when you were a GM, Scott, how much did you try to use the media to run subterfuge, get what you want, smoke somebody out on a trade? Because I'm betwixt and between on what we're hearing out of Foxborough these days.
Yeah, hang on one second, Gresh. Before we get back to this, you guys are just going to go right past that major fail you just had. I mean, it's draft day and your phones aren't working.
Yeah, you know what? We fumbled the pick. You know
what? Get a hold of a pick. I mean,
we got nervous. We're role playing. If we're Elliot Wolf,
we're like the Mike Tice Minnesota Vikings. We missed our pick. Now we got to run it up there.
Hey, that's good. You know that's good. That's going to be Elliot's line. He's going to say, hey, listen, guys, don't complain about my pick, no matter what it is, because you can't even get your phones to work on draft day. So I beat you there. So he's one up on you guys. Elliot won, you guys, nothing.
Oh, my God.
Gresh, to go back to your question, you know, first of all, I think you guys know I rarely, in my decade there, I was rarely in the media. I never did any. Again, if you go back, things have changed. Bill was the one that spoke pre-draft. He was the one that spoke post-draft. So I never interacted with the media, on or off the record. So sending signals or information or misinformation out there, my thing is this. When I look at there's different kinds of misinformation, right? You could send a story out there that maybe you guys or maybe your team's looking to do this or – But here's the misinformation that I see the most that I really struggle with and squirm with is the people, whoever the folks are, and the finger always gets pointed at the teams when there's misinformation about kids out there and the players. I call them kids, but the players. And when people are doing things in order to elevate their prospect or to maneuver or maybe make things fall the way that they want to get a player, or if there's an agent trying to elevate his own player who's putting misinformation out there about a kid who's worked his entire life to get to a certain space and to be drafted, that stuff I have no patience or tolerance for. I think it's one of the most mean-spirited things you can do. And, I've seen people, I've seen whether it's media folks, I've seen agents, and I have seen some people from the clubs beating up a player or leaking like the CJ Stroud stuff last year. I mean, totally, totally unnecessary. I understand he ended up in a great place. He ended up where he was supposed to be, but that doesn't always happen when misinformation gets out there. So, my feelings, concentrate on what your job is, get the evaluation right, get the identification right, do your job the way you're supposed to do it. And there's no need to lie to folks. And again, like if I was talking to you guys before the draft, what purpose would it serve our relationship if I was lying to you? Right?
No, I get it, but I'm curious. I'm curious, Scott, because what GM worth anything is going to allow himself to be influenced by something he sees on TV?
Yeah. Christian, this is an incredible question because they shouldn't. And that's why, I wanted to talk about this topic on NFL Network, and we didn't get the time. But we're looking at this draft, and all of a sudden we're hearing that there's going to be four quarterbacks, all these quarterbacks that have elevated out of nowhere. And part of the reason and the purpose is that they've elevated is that it's all anyone's talking about in the media, right? And not just in New England, right? New England's talking about it. The New England media is because there's a need for a quarterback. But the national media, there's so much focus being put on quarterbacks, 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 that there's this avalanche, and we see people fighting and trading to get up to take a quarterback that isn't necessarily one of the best players. And then when you talk to people in the positions that are going to make decisions, they don't understand why these quarterbacks are running up the boards. But the point that I'm making is there's so much – I don't think we give enough credit to the fans – as to how intelligent they are about football and how smart they want to be. They want to hear more about quarterbacks. So I think teams, unfortunately, are starting to be influenced. I mean, just go back to, the 2021 draft. Five quarterbacks taken in the top 15. Now, at the end of the season, the college season that year, I don't think that there were five quarterbacks ranked that high. But five went in the top 15. And four of those five have already been traded. And not one of the players that's been traded has gotten back anything more than a third day pick.
Now, Scott, is that because they're overdrafted or because the need is so great?
Well, yes, there's a need to get a quarterback. I mean, I totally get it. Yes, it's a need to get a quarterback. But, and again, I'm not saying that the San Francisco 49ers model or our model with Brady is going to happen. That's lightning in a bottle. But you don't have to get a great quarterback at the top of the draft. And yes, you need the quarterback. There's no doubt you need a quarterback to be successful and to sustain success. But to alter your draft board to go out of need versus best player available, to me, doesn't always make sense. And it's, you know, it's which is coming first, the chicken or the egg on this?
Scott Pioli with Gresh and Fourier here on WEEI talking about the NFL draft. First round is tonight. Patriots are sitting at number 3. Scott, I saw a thing the other day on how the amount of picks needed to move up is just so enormous now. What is a bigger factor in trades, in your opinion, at the highest level in the draft? Is it, you know, that whole prohibitive cost of getting up there? But is giving up all those picks worth it? Because contractually, you're not handing a guy $60 million guaranteed anymore at the top of the draft and almost being automatically married to them. Is it the money or the picks that has changed maybe the way people have viewed moving up and down in the first round?
You know, Gresh, I think it's a combination of those two things. And again, usually when you move, if you move up, you're moving up to get a specific player. Again, this one isn't sexy, but when we moved up, you know, many years ago to take Ty Warren, we were moving up to take Ty Warren, right? That was the 2003 draft. We moved up one spot because we wanted to make sure we were, you know, we were going to get the guy. But when you look at what teams are doing and they give up, I just don't like that philosophy. Because here's the deal, and not many general managers want to say this out loud, not many, or, you know, whatever the job is, whoever's making the picks, you're going to get it wrong more often than you're going to get it right. So if you've only got your 7 picks and you've got 7 swings at bat, it's probably not going to end up well. You need to gather picks, collect picks to get more swings in order to get more hits. That's just the reality of it. Just own and understand that, you know, you're not that smart. You're not that good. You're going to do the best job you can. Hopefully your process will put you in the right place. But when I see teams giving up all that currency to move up, you have to get it right. Because if you don't, it can cripple the organization for years.
And Scott, and that's kind of why I like when we're talking to Scott Pioli. And when I see like what's coming out of the Patriots, like this emphasis and this, you know, paraphrasing their own words from Elliott Wolf and Gerard Mayo, how important it is to get this right. I feel like they're putting so much pressure. Like the whole franchise is predicated on this number 3 pick and them getting it right and choosing the right quarterback. I'm just curious how you feel about their approach and how they've handled it so far.
Yeah, you know, so far listening to them, getting it right, you know, and I think Elliott's doing a good job of being vague there. Getting it right doesn't mean that getting it right is taking the exact specific player at number 3 if it's a player that, you know, unless it's a player that they really love. So maybe he's saying getting it right is moving back to number 5 or to number 6, still getting a quarterback that they like and getting more picks. We don't know what his description or definition of getting it right is. Is there a lot of pressure up there? Heck yeah. Heck yeah. I mean, in my first year in Kansas City, I had the number 3 pick overall. And that was, you know, and it's shown to be historically one of the worst drafts ever. And we were comfortable with the person we took and Tyson Jackson, who we thought was going to be a cornerstone for our defense and the defense we're going to run. I mean, the guy ended up being a 10-year starter, but it's not what, you know, a starting defensive lineman that doesn't get sacks isn't necessarily what you're hoping to get. The problem was we couldn't move out. So in terms of Elliott getting it right and Gerard getting it right, the franchise getting it right, you know, we don't know if that's a certain quarterback or moving back, which, again, I would encourage fans that if Elliott and Gerard and the team decides to move back a little bit because they have a quarterback they think that they can get a little bit later and add currency, I would say, you know, hey, right on. You know, just give them some room to breathe and let them develop the quarterback.
Scott Pioli with us just for a few more minutes here on Gresham Fourier. How did you or do you as a GM balance an owner who is like, oh boy, I maybe have the wheel for the first time here, or I've got the influence and maybe it's oppo of what you're thinking in terms of what you would like to do in the draft. Is that as big a thing as people make it out to be? Do you have to give the owner the stiff arm a little bit or jump up on the table and say, no, we need to do this for this reason?
You know, fortunately, Gresh, I was, you know, even with all the teams that I was ever with, that was never a factor. Even when I was a slappy in Cleveland, you know, for Bill and Cleveland. You know, seriously, Art Modell didn't tell Bill who to draft. When we, you know, from there we went to, you know, we went to Baltimore, and it's a fascinating story. In Baltimore, we got there in 96. I was, you know, Bill had been fired. I was there in 96. And Ozzie didn't even have the title of general manager. There was no general manager. There was no head of player personnel. Ted Marchibroda was the head coach. And even though Ozzie was the final say-so, you know, the owner wanted Ozzie to draft Lawrence Phillips in 96.
Running back out of Nebraska. And,
but exactly right, who, you know, ended up going to jail and hung himself in prison, God rest his soul. I mean, and we knew that there was trouble there. So what we ended up doing with the fourth pick overall that year is exactly what Ozzie wanted, what Ted Marchibroda wanted, what Kirk Ferentz wanted, what Phil Savage wanted, what I wanted, which was to draft Jonathan Ogden. And Art made it clear what he wanted, but said, Ozzie, do what you want to do. And that changed the franchise. And then again, all those years with the decade with the Patriots, Robert never told us what to do. And truthfully, Bill would not have put himself in that role, nor would I have gone up there, or Ernie Adams. The three of us would not have been in those seats if it was going to be done that way. And then Clark Hunt never did it. So, Gresh, I don't know exactly how to answer it other than
– I think you did.
You know, if I
you
was –
You did? Yeah, I think you did.
If I was in that role, I wouldn't join an organization where I was being told what to do, because then they really didn't need me. I'd be useless.
Yeah. So listen, last one for me before we got to go, Scott, is, okay, you're the GM. You wake up in the morning. It's draft day. Like, what's going through your mind? What's your routine? Like, what's the anticipation like in for you on draft day?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, Christian, because it changed so much over my years, right? The draft didn't used to be the thing that went on at prime time. It started, you know, in the mornings. It was a two-day thing, and it started in the morning. So it evolved and changed over the years. But I know a lot of GMs and head coach, they play golf. I've never played golf in my life. You know, unless there's windmills and elephants on the course, you know, I'm not playing golf. So I just found a way to relax. I always got a workout in. You know, I would just find a way to try to not think about the enormity of the day and to try to decompress and relax.
So you're not running scenarios through your head. You're not role-playing a situation, trying to get out of the third pick, right? None of that stuff.
No, if you're having to do that stuff this morning, you've lost already. I mean, that was one of the great things I learned in my early years working under Bill in Cleveland was the preparation component and how important it was. And you need to run those scenarios. You need to do all those things. And then you need to be prepared. But you also need to have your mind and soul rested and comfortable so you can work with confidence. And work with confidence, but also understand that there's going to be so many things out of your control. And if you start the anxiety early in the morning, you know, emotionally you're going to be exhausted because you're sitting there at number three or let's just say you're at number five or six. You may end up picking because of trade somewhere in the late 20s because that's what you choose to do. And if you've worn yourself out emotionally, again, you're just not going to be prepared for the moment. The preparation needs to be completed long ago.
Well, I would dare say that if there was ever in those days of Scott Pioli getting a pump in before the draft, if there was ever a GM bench press record that needed to be set,
he's going
to
win it.
Pioli was going to set
it.
That.
I've
over,
seen him in there.
Over a Spielman, I would say, as well. Scott, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate you, and we love talking to you, and hopefully we see you over the summer. Thank you.
I hope so too, guys. Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.